This is a man that needs no introduction.
Who is this guy?
The most knowledgeable columnist in the city of Pittsburgh.
Some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey.
He goes by only one name.
Hotter than Bond, cooler than Bullet. Shaft.
No, it's not Shaft. It's Rossi. And he's here right now on Trip Live Radio.
Rossi time. Can't start your weekend without a little anger and venom. Trip columnist Rob Rossi is more than that, of course, and he joins us here to discuss all the weekend's events. Rossi, wanted to start with you about the U.S. Steel pullout on the Consol Energy Center, or rather Civic Arena development. How big of a deal is this?
Well, you know, I'd love to be able to provide some clarity on that. I mean, it doesn't look good from the standpoint of, you know, to our region. I mean, that's a significant company that is certainly in a state of difficulty right now. And for the Penguins, I mean, that's a big blow to what they had planned for their development. Now, it's my understanding that they've known about, or they've suspected this for a while, and they've already had some companies express interest. But the reality is, if that land is going to be part of a sale of the team, especially part of a sale that would increase the cost, or the return on investment for the ownership, then that land becomes an increasingly complicated product as part of that deal. And I wonder if the land's going to be part of the deal if the Penguins are indeed sold. I wonder if the Penguins are going to be sold right now. I mean, I do. I wonder if this might be something where right now it's not the best thing financially in terms of maximizing their profit to move this team, given the way things just seem to be developing. But, you know, I don't have any information that suggests that it is or isn't going to hold anything up.
Why do they think, Rob, that it might go up? Why do they think that, based on the way things are going, there might be a better time in the future?
Well, I think you have to evaluate, and look, this is people with better understanding, knowledge of business than I, and probably a lot of people, you know, is there a point where that land becomes more attractive to be part of a deal? Is there more certainty? You know, right now there's not an anchor tenant for that land, and there has to be so much of that land developed, a percentage each year, to really have it be something that whoever owns the rights to develop it controls. So, I mean, there are some restrictions, you know, and it depends right now on what they have in terms of offers, what they've received, who might be interested. You know, if they're not getting what they want in terms of what they envision this whole package, or maybe just the franchise exclusive of the development rights, then, you know, you might think maybe if there's a big playoff run or something like that, maybe it becomes a more attractive product right now, or later on. I don't know. I suspect the silence that we've heard means either that there's a lot of stuff that's happened behind the scenes that we just haven't heard about, which seems unlikely in this day and age, or that they haven't received the offers for what they originally thought this would be worth, and maybe now they're considering whether it's better to just hold on to it and wait a while, or hold on to it and see if they could do some things to make it more profitable. But again, this is just all opinion here. I'm not basing that on anything anybody's told me.
It is kind of mind-boggling to think that this is about the sixth year for Consol now, and that's still just a gravel parking lot.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it took a while to get things going on the North Shore. And then when it did, it kind of went quick. And the Penguins have been clear that they think that's going to be the model here. I don't think the North Shore had as much attention on it in terms of development because, let's face it, there is a whole history of the Hill District, you know, wanting certain things because they feel like a big part of their culture was ripped up when the Civic Arena was built. And I understand that. I mean, this is a complicated situation. And it's coming at a time when there's also been a lot of redevelopment downtown. So, you know, what you can turn this into, they might not have as many options as did the North Shore, because remember, that was new at the time. That's going to be competing. So there's a lot of factors here. But, yeah, it's weird to see them moving around piles of dirt and not see anything up yet, not see tangible things in the ground, and to know now that that building is not going to be really the first big, big thing we can point to. That's a tough blow. It's a tough blow for a lot of, not just for the Penguins. I mean, for all of us. I think, you know, I think that news yesterday, if it didn't hit you hard in a lot of ways, I think you probably aren't as much of a Pittsburgher as probably those of us who it did hit hard.
What will happen first, Rossi? Some construction over there, or some reconstruction of the net size in the building that is across the street?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I was musing about this the past couple of days again on Twitter. I just can't watch this product. I don't mean the Penguins. I just mean the NHL. It's just there's just no room out there. It's not even a game that I find to be very fast anymore. The rinks are definitely too small for all the people they have on the ice. And I mean, you got to think about this. There's 5 skaters, 2 goalies, and what, 4 officials now? It's a game where they defend differently because the red line's gone. And the goalies are too good. And when people talk about the equipment, what bothers me is they always talk about the goaltenders. They always talk about the cages. Now, the goalies have grown. I mean, you know, there's a lot of 6-foot goalies now. There didn't used to be. They used to be small men. They're not small men anymore. They're athletes. But aside from, and yes, their equipment is, but I've never had a problem with the goaltender equipment being as bulky as it is, because to be honest, if I was having a puck shot with a stick that was basically constructed to be a weapon, then I would want a lot of equipment too. My problem is with the equipment everybody else is wearing, which has made it so easy to block shots, because you just don't fear getting hurt. And I think it's congested the offensive zone in a way that was unpredictable and maybe isn't a way that you can rule out now. Maybe there's not a rule you can put in, because I don't know how you can rule out blocking shots. I think if they made the equipment smaller and different for the guys on the ice that aren't the goaltenders, we might see a more offensive game, but I don't think they're ever going to do that because they don't want the lawsuits potentially that can come with that.
Are you buying, Rob, that this team is going to make that deep playoff run that you referenced before when we were talking about the sale?
No. I mean, but I don't know that there's anything they could do to make me convinced of that, because, to be honest, let's just say hypothetically the Penguins finished with the best record in hockey. I think the argument I'd make against them making a deep playoff run is I don't think they're particularly built to be physical enough in a 7-game series to win it, and they would have to play some physical teams. But more importantly, and I can't stress this enough, I don't have any faith in Crosby and Malkin anymore to be big in the playoffs. I just don't. I mean, I've seen too little of it. I've seen too little of them elevating their game. It's not that they're bad in the playoffs. They are pretty much, statistically, for the most part, maybe each of them have had some pretty bad series here recently, Malkin last year, Crosby the year before, but for the most part, they produce a point-per-game clip very similar to what they do in the regular season. But it has been 7 years now since they have elevated their play, since they've gone above that, and I think this team would need that. So, no, I don't have faith. And if I'm proven wrong, I'd be the first one to say it, and I kind of hope I am, but it will require a level of hockey from both Crosby and Malkin that I just question if they can reach again. I just think we've seen the best of them as players.
Rob, Ken, go ahead.
No, go ahead, guy.
I would say Ken proposed a question when we came in today, Rob. Which game would we talk about most would be more important on Monday morning if Pitt beats Notre Dame and the Steelers beat Oakland?
I think Pitt beating Notre Dame would be more significant, because I think it would be more of a surprise. I think if the Steelers beat Oakland, it's, well, they should. You know, now Ben doesn't
should
have
they?
The...
Well, I think we're on a limb here, Tim. We're the only ones that the other way.
You know what? I disagree with that, Rob, and I don't know how much they should beat Oakland. I don't know how much better they are than Oakland right now. I mean, they're about a 5-point favorite at home. I get that. Maybe I think the line should be a little bit more of a shrunken line to about a field goal or so. But there are more tangible benefits, I think, for the playoff picture for the Steelers beating the Raiders than there are ACC benefits for Pitt beating Notre Dame.
Yeah, but guys, we're living in the woods here. We're not seeing the forest from the trees. The Notre Dame game is a huge game nationally and regionally. And if you're a program like Pitt and you beat Notre Dame, it still means something. Is it going to matter in the ACC? No. But if Pitt beats Notre Dame, that will be something people are talking about Monday morning in Pittsburgh. It will signify, right or wrong, the perception will be that Pitt has taken a step forward.
That's the point, though, Rob. I think it's a wrong perception because
That's where we get into trouble, guys, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody. It doesn't matter if the perception is wrong. The perception is the reality.
But is the perception really going to be there the way that you're suggesting that it is? I think Pitt fans look back to 2008, see them beating Notre Dame on the road in that great 36-33 game, and then pissing it away 2 weeks later against Cincinnati in the game that really mattered.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that this is a different circumstance. This is a new coaching staff that is coming off a loss that people were disappointed by at home after they had gotten off to a pretty good start. They were nationally ranked. If they would follow that up with a win over a ranked Notre Dame opponent at home in front of a packed house where there's going to be a lot of Notre Dame fans, people around here would remember that. People around here on Monday morning would think that is a bigger deal than the Steelers beating a team that people perceive is not as good as the Steelers. Doesn't mean that that perception is right or accurate, but it is the reality, and that's the way it would be viewed. I'm not talking about whether we can make points against it, arguments against it. I'm talking about what the perception of the fan base would be.
Pat Narduzzi has been an interesting quote all year, Rossi. On his radio show, Jerry wrote this at TribLive.com, Narduzzi said, quote, Notre Dame has been having its cake and eating it too, and the NCAA has let them do it for too long, end quote. How bold of a statement is that?
I guess it's incredibly bold, although I have no idea what that means.
Well, they're an ACC member in everything except football. And
they're literally half an ACC member in football, too.
But look, they're Notre Dame and everybody else isn't. And here's the thing. They don't have to join a conference. When they get to the point where they have to join a conference, they will. And they will have every major conference in the country lining up. Because Notre Dame has its own football television network. And Notre Dame is a program that cannot be a contender for 20-some years, and the minute they get back into the national title game, it becomes the highest-rated national title game of the last two decades. I'm not a Notre Dame fan. I have no skin in this game. But the idea that Notre Dame can't call some shots, that doesn't make sense to me because they can. They can and they do. So when they stop calling the shots, I'll start believing that the NCAA can somehow get involved in this. But to be honest, I think the NCAA needs Notre Dame a lot more than Notre Dame needs the NCAA. And so does every one of these conferences, and that's why this is the dynamic that has existed since pretty much every team stopped becoming an independent. There's a reason Notre Dame's still an independent, and it's because they can't be. And if any other college football program could be, they would be, but they can't. It's only Notre Dame.
And that's what having your cake and eating it, too, is. When you get included without being in a conference to be considered in the national championship game, there's this team, and Notre Dame is included in the group. Before the playoffs started, I'm talking about, that's having your cake and eating it, too.
But who wouldn't? I'm like you.
I don't love them. I don't hate them. I don't really care. But as long as they can get away with it, then who cares?
That's what I'm saying.
Stop them then.
Like, I mean, it's an easy thing for Pat Narduzzi to say, but, I mean, it's – what are we arguing about here? I mean, they're having their cake and they're eating it too. And to be honest, sometimes they have their cake and they eat it and they rub it in the face of everybody else who gets stuck with Brussels sprouts. But, you know,
I love Brussels sprouts.
This is America. That's what happens.
Lots of butter and bacon.
Yeah. A little bit of garlic.
What were you talking about? Trumping the vegetables.
Thanksgiving's less than 3 weeks away.
Rob, real quick before we go here, that report came out of Canada that Sidney Crosby was upset with the Pittsburgh media, and then that was followed up by our former Trib colleague Dejan Kovacevic and said it was just one guy. Why does Sid hate Dan Potash?
I don't know, guys. I really can't comment on that.
Why can't you comment on it?
I have no interest in commenting on it. I mean, I don't – have any opinion on what other people are saying about what other people are saying with regards to that. I mean, that's just...
Okay, well, how about commenting on Sidney Crosby and whether or not he has a right to be upset at anybody in the Pittsburgh media?
He wouldn't. If he is upset, he wouldn't have... I mean, look, if he's upset with anybody in the Pittsburgh media, and I'm probably would be the people he's upset with most times, I would guess, hey, you know, everybody's allowed to be upset at whoever they want to be. I don't think Sid has been unfairly covered, and I
well, that's
think
what
for
I was
the most
getting
part,
at. That's the part the I was getting at.
Superstars in Pittsburgh of hockey are covered in a way that is favorable more than any other superstars for any of the other teams, because there are a lot of hockey fans that cover the Penguins, and there are a lot of Penguin fans that cover the Penguins. I think sometimes that reflects good for the Penguins, and sometimes I think it reflects poorly for the Penguins. But I think that what we should be talking about is that Sidney Crosby finally went to the net, and that's where he's going to have to go if he ever wants to be involved in the conversation of the best player in the world again. He doesn't deserve to be in that conversation right now.
Are you suggesting the Penguins are covered by shills and toadies, and one in particular?
No, I'm not suggesting anything.
and employees.
No, well, a lot of employees.
I mean, look, we've all been upset at Dan Potash. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, Dan knows that. He's too nice. We're a bunch of cynical jerks, and he's all been upset. And, you know, there's some people in this town that like to make a lot of things personal with other members of the media. Maybe that's more of a story than the one that you guys wanted to talk about.
Thank you, Rossi. Enjoy your Heinz Field doubleheader.
I will, guys. Take care. Talk to you Monday.
All right, Rob Rossi, Trip columnist extraordinaire. Also doing some radio on Brand X, I believe. How about Narduzzi ripping Notre Dame? I agree with him, but for him to say it, and game week of Notre Dame on his radio show, he's just stream of consciousness, isn't he? He doesn't
no
care.
Filter. Doesn't seem like there's much of one there.
He's just, you get him.
Which you might like. If he's your guy, maybe you like that.
He's going to give E.J. Borghetti an ulcer, some of these things. Can't you see EJ hovering like when he says something like that?
Yeah, it's the same. That story I told you about Wonstadt when he told me specifically which players he was recruiting. EJ sitting in the corner. Same lemon face that Keith Butler gave me when I was talking about the tight ends for the Raiders.
Ooh. Watching Wani on halftime at a Baylor game last night.
Oh, how did Baylor do? I didn't even see.
They were winning. Yeah, they were up 21-10, I think, when I turned it off.
The Notre Dame thing, I wonder, is NBC getting its money's worth out of that contract right now?
I would think they are.
Are they?
They went to the national title game a couple years ago.
I mean, like, was that 1 week the payoff? Because, I mean, like, you tell me, is there much, aside from the fact that it's Notre Dame, sure, it's Notre Dame, but are they getting any more or less buzz than LSU, Alabama, Baylor, Clemson, Ohio State, and this BCS first week ranking? I feel like they've been the least discussed team in the top 10.
But I think that they people love them, hate them, watch them no matter what. I think when it comes to the Alabamas and the LSUs, the average college football fan will watch them when they play a good team, but they're not going to watch them when they're winning 45-3.
I feel like nowadays in college football, the new Notre Dame is the SEC. I think people who don't root for an SEC team hate the SEC. I feel like if you are a fan of an ACC team, a Pac-12 team, you go to the University of Colorado, you go to the University of Michigan, whatever, you're rooting against the SEC team that's on television that has the most to lose. You'd rather see Alabama lose to Ole Miss.
I do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel like that paradigm, the old Notre Dame paradigm, is now the SEC. And I agree with Narduzzi on this one. I do think he pops off and he's stream of consciousness and there's a little too much early cower in his personality. I've said that on a couple of occasions, but on this one, he's right. You know, the NCAA, you want to talk about having your cake and eating it too. Just the whole college football championship setup. The NCAA wants to be pushed away from the table on deciding the hard stuff, but have all the money get raked in on behalf of the logos and the shirts and the jerseys that are on their affiliated schools that go to the bowl games. That's what they want. That's having your cake and eating it too.
The problem, this might not have been your point, Tim, about the SEC, but it's boring a lot of weekends. The defense is so good or too good the quarterback play just is awful for the most part. So it doesn't stand out. Like, yeah, I feel like Notre Dame's more sizzle.
No, but you know what? It wasn't that way 2 years ago. I mean, 2 or 3 years ago, they had some good quarterbacks in there. They all left at the same time. Like
Cam Newton, who's the quarterback that you've been like, wow, that guy's...
You know what, though, Ken? I find the Big 12 boring, and it's the exact opposite. I get bored with 55-52
games. Yeah,
that's
too much. That's
like us playing out in the street. I mean, I need something in between.
But when McElroy was there, even though it wasn't a great pro quarterback, they put points on the board. You know, Tebow was there. Murray.
Tebow
Stafford.
Was exciting.
I mean, those
You're right about Tebow.
Manziel was there. Manziel was in this.
After you just roasted Manziel for the last hour.
In the pros, not in college. McCarron was good. The Alabama quarterbacks were good. The Ole Miss quarterback was good. Dak Prescott.
Except you can't think of his name.
Bo Wallace, that's his name.
Dak Prescott.
But watch the game.
The great Dak Prescott. Yeah, that got me tuning in every weekend.
Ken, did you watch the SEC 2 years ago? There were points being scored every week.
There were some great games, yeah. I mean, Alabama, Auburn, and you know.
You're acting like it's old.
I can't name. Who's the quarterback for LSU this year? Who's the quarterback for Alabama this year?
I just gave you. Arguing what I said 10 seconds ago. The quarterbacking this year is down. They're in a cycle when the quarterbacks are down.
It feels like it's mostly
two
down.
Or three. Yeah, it is. It is. But two or three years ago. No. Ken, did you watch the SEC at all? There were 38-31 games. The Auburn-Alabama game, when Auburn had the kick six game, there were points in that game.
I agree.
The
Ole
Miss
was a great
game. Alabama was like 34-27, something like that.
I don't know the quarterbacks. I've watched the games, and it's more a defensive struggle most weeks. That's my perception. Maybe you're right. Maybe last year scoring was up, or 2 years ago, whatever that was. That doesn't really compare to Notre Dame. I'm not saying like their games are all must-watch because they've been down for a couple years too since the national title appearance.
No, but you're misinterpreting it. You're talking about the general fan and what they want to watch. Notre Dame's following remains. I don't care if they're all over 50 years old or they're all Catholic or they're all Irish or whatever they are. They get good ratings. I mean, it doesn't really matter whether you like watching them or because I fall in the category of. It seems like they generate so much hate or love, and I don't care.
Yeah, what's the SEC rate? What are the SEC ratings here? They're on CBS, right? So that's that. You know, that would be a.
I don't know. I get a kick out of all the email and phone calls I get every Saturday. People bitching about. I mean, we might as well become the Ohio State Network lately. Back to back Saturday night games on ABC with Ohio State kicking somebody's butt.
But I bet you people in this region would rather watch Ohio State or Notre Dame than the SEC.
They probably would. My point is, it kills me that people call or write thinking I have something to do with what game we televise.
Ken.
Back in the Big East days, they complained because we had the Big East television package and we had to show a Big East game on Saturday afternoon rather than maybe in Alabama.
I'm going to give you Auburn scores from the year they went to the championship game. Ole Miss.
With Cam Newton?
No. This is 2 years ago when they lost to Florida State.
All
Mississippi
right.
State, 24-20. LSU, 35-21. That was the loss. Ole Miss, 30-22. Western Carolina, 62-3. All right, Western Carolina. A&M, 45-41. Arkansas, 35-17. Tennessee, 55-23. Georgia, 43-38. Alabama, 34-28. Missouri in the SEC title game, 59-42. Florida State in the title game, 34-31. That's not enough points for you.
With Nick Marshall as the quarterback?
Yes.
That sounds great. I watched some of those games and I enjoyed them. That doesn't take away my overall perception that it's a defensive struggle most weeks for a lot of these teams.
This year, yes, they're in a bad cycle for quarterbacks. This year, a bunch of good ones on a
actually,
college
like
level.
LSU Florida was a great game. That was high scoring and it was good. I'm not saying I don't like the SEC or it's a bad conference. I'm just telling you what my perception is, and I think many people in the Northeast feel that way, that they just, it's a grind. I'm going to watch Notre Dame. I want to watch the Golden Dome helmets fly past.
Is that
I'll
true?
Watch the Buckeyes.
I mean, I'd love to.
I don't know.
I would love
That's
to get that
theory.
Sort of data that you're talking about right now to see if in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or Boston or New York, you know, like Northeastern markets, if there's really that much more of a draw to watch Notre Dame than the SEC, because I don't think there is.
part of the problem is Alabama's playing Middle Tennessee every time I turn them on, or Louisiana Monroe, and it's like, why do I want to watch this 37-0 blowout? And when you get into the SEC schedule, okay, but like this past week or 2 weeks ago, Alabama, Tennessee, 19-14. Okay, Alabama's good. They grinded out a win against – who's tuning in for that one?
I just brought up Alabama's numbers from that same year. These are their point totals in wins. 35-49, which is a 49-42 game against A&M. 45-48, 52, 45, 38, 49, 34, 20-6, 45-31 in the bowl game. I mean, they score in the SEC. This is just a down year because a lot of the quarterbacks are gone, and there's a transit. There's a major storyline going into the college football season that it's tough to gauge the SEC because of the lack of established quarterbacks coming back to their team.
You can email the show, sportstalk@tribweb.com. Is Syracuse in the SEC? Did I miss that? Did they?
Why? Because I'm defending the SEC?
Yes, and vehemently so. No, passionate about this.
The whole topic of conversation began with me suggesting that the SEC as a conference is now what Notre Dame used to be. Golden Dome used to equal Black Hat. The Black Hat is the SEC now. You root against whoever is good as the SEC because of the perceived
the bias
that exists for that conference.
I agree with that. But that's when the polls come out. Not necessarily every week are you tuning into the games and saying, I hope Alabama loses, because most times I think not a whole lot of people are watching. It's too defensive of a struggle.
To underscore your point, I have no connection to anything in the SEC. And 9 Saturdays out of 10, if I've got time to watch a game and it's the 3:30 time slot, I'm putting on CBS to watch the SEC game as opposed to Notre Dame if they're up against.
Yeah, it's the NFL minor leagues. I mean, there's good talent. There's no doubt about that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe CBS gets great ratings for those games on Saturdays. I don't have data to back this up.
Well, CBS does. I don't know if KDKA does, but CBS does for sure.
Well, more importantly, KDKA and the stations in the Northeast, which are in Big Ten country, you know, and the Notre Dame effect is still felt around here.
And Guy, you would know this better than us. Like, for instance, you just said it, the Ohio State Network, right? You know, before you guys go on at 6 o'clock or 6:30, 7 o'clock, whenever the news hits, how much of a pop is there for whatever Big Ten game is normally on ABC? Or do you get more of a pop? Do you have any idea if Notre Dame is a better lead-in for you if they're on ABC at 3:30?
I don't think we've had Notre Dame all year.
Or the late game even.
As a lead-in to the news, I think it depends on if the game's close. I don't think it matters so much who's playing. If it's a close game, people are still watching. And the thing about it is, they almost always, they never end right on the half hour, so they go to a scoreboard show anyway with some highlights that I think even if people were watching the game, be it Notre Dame, be it Ohio State, or be it a lesser game, people tune out. I don't know how many people hang around to watch a scoreboard show. I think real football fans switch to another place to watch another game rather than sit there and watch those highlights.
Well, anyway, Ken, back to your original point about bringing it up, and it is something I feel passionately about because, you know, I do think that this college football playoff thing is such a double-edged sword. That's not the right phrase. Narduzzi just sort of expanded the umbrella and thrown the NCAA under the same characterization as having your cake and eating it too, because they want every avenue for dollars to flow into their pockets. They just don't want to make the decisions. And it would be a hard decision to force Notre Dame to be in a conference and say that they can't, but the BCS format allows them to do it.
Yep.
You know,
Will guys like Narduzzi standing up on a pulpit and screaming about it make change?
No,
5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Because there's been more powerful voices than Pat Narduzzi that have suggested this about Notre Dame in the past. And you know, Pat Narduzzi is a first-year coach at a sub-mediocre historic program in the University of Pittsburgh that doesn't get any sort of buzz whatsoever nationally. Him saying this is like a fart in the wind.
Sub-mediocre, huh?
Well,
all
that's
right, pizza boy.
That's what they've been for the, you know, since Dan Marino left.
Scott emails the show. He says, I feel for Ken. His takes on the show remind me of what happens with me and my wife. I make one point, and she starts to argue part of that point in a completely different way, and I start defending things I don't believe in just to get a win, and at the end of it all, I start wondering, how in the hell am I defending clubbing baby seals? Or how in the hell am I defending Johnny Manziel?
Or running Guinness through fish bladders.
Oh, we haven't gotten to that yet. I brought this up to Guy before the show, and he was dying for me to work this into the conversation. So now he's just going to shoehorn it in, and that's fine. But do you like Guinness, Ken?
Yeah, it's a little. I got to be in the mood for it.
Okay, I'm going to tell you why.
More IPAs.
When he's not drinking stouts. White Zinfandel.
When we're coming back after the break, we're going to take a quick break here. Is that right?
What's wrong with White Zinfandel?
A lot's wrong with
nothing
White
Zinfandel. If you're a 22-year-old woman.
Yeah, if it's the bridal shower party, then it's great, Ken. But I'm going
to
tell
Tim, you. I've been out to bars with you, and I've seen some of the hoity-toity drinks that you've ordered. I wouldn't be ripping my White Zinfandel.
What hoity-toity drinks?
Do you drink Zinfandel, really?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Give me a hoity-toity drink that I've had.
Every drink that you order has a piece of fruit or three in it that looks the color of, like, a woman's purse.
That's not even true.
That's totally true.
We spent 90% of the show is spent talking about craft beers. Is that what you mean, hoity-toity beers? Is that what you're saying?
No, creative hard alcoholic drinks.
Creative hard alcoholic drinks with fruit in them, like Doers on the Rocks?
No. You're not a Doers on the Rocks man. Come on.
You're right. I'm more of a Johnny Walker guy, but scotch is my drink of choice. Are you talking about a Negroni?
No, not Negroni.
A Negroni has an orange in it sometimes.
Blue Moon's got an orange in it. It's good beer.
I drink Negronis like crazy. That's not a hoity-toity drink,
I wish I could remember your drink orders.
Well, I'm going to tell you why you should hate Guinness when we come back, all right?
Also, your hot stove suggestion.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that, too.
And Todd Haley on the Immaculate Reception.
And hey, back to that emailer. You know, no one forced you to defend Johnny Manziel or defend your notion that the SEC sucks. You did that on your own.
Well, all I'm saying is Manziel should start the rest of the year because Cleveland season is mud. I'm not saying Manziel is good. No, then I'm backed into Manziel's good.
Well, you sort of framed it that way, that Manziel
I think
good.
He's got a potential maybe.
He blows.
To be good at times and you could work with him.
He blows.
92-yard drive. Oh, let me get one more in from Brad. He agrees with you. Ken, you're a smart man, but you're out of your element with Manziel. Just because he had one decent drive, it doesn't translate to long-term NFL success. Rob Johnson is living proof of that. Well, the guy made four starts. Good God, are we judgmental on a guy after four starts. And he's playing in Cleveland. Not like he's
Listen to
surrounded
you talking
by talent.
About quick judgments, and you wanted to fire guys after two starts.
They probably deserved it. Buck goes Haley on the Immaculate Reception, some yes. other hoity-toity drink topic that Tim wants to bring up. That's next.
Mr. Reuter Plumbing with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge. Why call Mr. Reuter first? Free estimates. You know the price before we start. Fixed right the first time. Clean, professional technicians, and all work guaranteed. Residential services include complete plumbing, repairs, clogged drains, and sewer cleaning. Faucets and disposals, toilets and water heaters. Drain cleaning services include trench, sewer, and water line replacement, pipelining and video inspection. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Service when you want it. Red carpet treatment, make the call 724-553-3355 or 412-567-1222. Online at Reuter2.com. That's Reuter, the number 2.com.